Freshme, and we are back for episode 4 in the podcast series Road to COP27, Making the Just Transition a Reality. A few days ago, we reached the 30-day countdown until the team and I, along with many other climate change delegates, touched down in Sharm el-Sheikh. All I can say is that there is a mixture of apprehension and excitement. I know from the GWEC side, from conversations we have had in our week-long trip to Wind Energy Hamburg, that this is nothing short of a busy season in wind. Ultimately, the timeline for COP27 and thinking even longer term to net zero targets by 2030 and 2050, we really are running out of time. Not only that, but every year we reflect on the new challenges that each year brings, and this year, by no means of exaggeration, is no exception, with energy security being high up on the list. We are seeing incredible amounts of pressure to mitigate the strain caused by the adversity of geopolitical influence, the invasion of Ukraine, and rising energy prices on civil society. So, if you haven't guessed it already, today's session will be on energy security, energy justice, and net zero, taking a solutions-based approach. Now, one of my frustrations within the climate change sector that I have found is the proportion of time we spend discussing the issues at hand. Now, whilst this is important, I would really be keen to see a more even split of time dedicated to talking about the problem, followed directly by solutions, as now is the time for real action. This year at COP, on the final thematic day, I'm very much looking forward to a solutions day, and I'm hoping that this will be a great end to the week. Renewable energy can be addressed as a solution to many of the challenges we face as we aim to phase out the use of fossil fuels worldwide, whilst ensuring clean, reliable and accessible energy supply for all.
Joining me today virtually, all the way from Lisbon, is Miguel Viana, the head of IR and sustainability at EDP and EDPR, who are part of the COP27 coalition at GWEC this year. And so without further ado, welcome Miguel to our GWEC podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on board.
Hello, Reshmi. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Miguel. Thank you. So Miguel, I've introduced you by your current name and title, but there's much more to you than that, including your extensive career in equity. And so would you be interested in giving us a summary before we get into the main conversation about how your journey into the renewable sector began?
Yes, of course. So yes, I started my career in equity research and of course in several sectors. I came across the energy sector in the early 2000s and starting in a time in which renewables were still really small in the energy sector. So even the electric utilities in Europe were quite dominated by coal, and gas was an emergent energy source with the combined cycle starting to be commissioned. We saw all this period and then the energy transition coming first to the first renewables. So in the mid 2000s. I followed very closely the sector, as I was equity research analyst of the utility sector, focused in Iberia. And later on, I was invited to come to EDP, to join EDP in 2006 as head of IR. And so it was a moment in which EDP started to invest more heavily in renewables. So I would say that in 2005, 2006, renewables, namely in the US market, were seen a little bit like toy projects. Most of traditional utilities, what they really liked was the big nuclear projects, big coal or gas projects, and the small 20, 30 or 50 megawatts of a wind farm in which you needed to go and negotiate with the local mayor, with local communities, was not very appealing for the big engineering teams in Europe. EDP, being a company, of course, based in Portugal, and which had recently extended its operations into Spain, two countries which were first movers, namely in terms of wind farms, and EDP being a small player in terms of the European sector, we identified wind power as a competitive advantage, given that we had already the skills, and that's how we started to grow into renewables, and then with the entrance into US, which I also followed as head of IR, and we entered in 2007 And then we did the IPO of EDP Renewables, which is the listed subsidiary for pure renewables listed subsidiary for EDP Group. And of course, with the increasing weight of renewables, and I think very important, with a steady strategy, always betting on renewables, investing and reinforcing our presence in the segment, not only in wind onshore, but also wind offshore and solar, not only utility scale, but also distributed generation, so rooftop solar, and more recently, other technologies which are also somehow complementary to renewables, namely batteries, where we are working now on hybrid solutions of wind and solar together with batteries, more advanced in US. And also we are now working now on projects on green hydrogen, namely in the Iberian Peninsula, but also in US and Brazil.
So quite a lot of projects, quite a lot of amazing moments within your career so far. And I think it's always fascinating to understand what led people to renewables. And obviously there was loads of synergies even from afar, as there are so many different options and so many different skill sets and backgrounds that the industry can benefit from. So that's really great to hear. And so now I think let's talk about the problem. By defining some of the challenges that energy security and energy justice bring, we can then move on to the solutions-based approach that I so desperately crave from the climate change space. And so what are some of the biggest challenges that we face as we strive to achieve energy justice and energy security in light of current pressures?
Yes, we live in a moment of not only a big challenge in terms of climate change, in which we know that renewables are the best answer to reduce CO2 emissions and to manage the global warming. We have also the issue of the cost of energy and affordability. And we know that renewables, that of course the cost of renewables 20 years ago or 15 years ago was nothing compared with what we have today. And so today, renewable energies are the most competitive energy that you can have, even considering the recent developments in terms of inflation of raw materials and all the issues around supply chain that have affected recently the global economy. We know that in terms of energy security, one of the big negatives that were that was addressed to renewables was the intermittency and the fact that you cannot rely on renewables because the wind is not always blowing and the sun is not always shining. But what we see today in Europe, namely with the disruptions in terms of fossil fuel supply and the dependence that we have on foreign countries, and namely the impacts that we have from the war in Ukraine, show that the fact that renewable energies can be produced very close from where the energy is consumed is definitely a plus regarding energy security. Of course, you need to have a diversified source of energy, and it's different depending on the region. You can have a mix which has a little bit more of wind offshore or a little bit more of solar or a little bit more of solar rooftop. Of course, batteries are also more and more competitive, as also we have now the promise of the reduction of costs of green hydrogen. So energy security will be much stronger with a higher weight of renewables than with the dependence of our economies from imports of fossil fuels from different countries in which the geopolitical changes can imply big changes in terms of the availability and the cost of that fossil fuels. So it's not anymore, renewables are not anymore just a solution regarding climate change, but the renewables are also critical regarding energy security and what we have seen both in terms of families, in terms of companies with the installation of distributed generation globally, and we have distributed generation in several parts in the world, namely in US, Brazil, Europe, Southeast Asia, but also that can be very complementary with the centralized wind or so wind onshore, wind offshore, and so it's this mix that also increases the energy security. So you don't rely just in one technology, but you can complement the different renewable technologies. Also very important is the issue of energy justice. As we know, a lot of the geopoliticals of the world in the last 50 years have been around the oil and gas and the fossil fuels and a lot of the poverty and the wealth countries around if you have the resources or not, and a lot of conflicts in the world around that. Of course, the issue of renewables and the domestic production will reduce that big pressures. Also important is what we are seeing today regarding the not in my backyard syndrome, meaning that of course we need to add much more renewables than what we had 10 years ago. So obviously the first locations and the first sites to develop and wind onshore wind onshore plant or a wind offshore plant or a solar plant. So the pressure in terms of land use, in terms of population, it's different from what was 10 or 15 years ago. So we need to work more with local communities on a very close relation in order that we have win-win projects that are, of course, positive for the companies that are developing the projects, but also for the countries, but also for the local community. So we need to hear and to hear what are the concerns of that local communities to find the best solutions, to have a stronger involvement with like with that local stakeholders in order to let's say reach the best solutions to everybody. And that is also part of the energy justice. You have to involve that local communities, because sometimes a project that has some impact locally, of course, you have to maximize the positive impact and minimize the negative impact. But then obviously it makes all the sense for the country as a whole, but it can have some issues for some smaller local communities that have to be, that have also to be addressed. So it's important also that being renewables the most competitive energy source, this will allow that the issue of affordability can be addressed. It takes time, okay? It takes time because, of course, the development of renewables is not immediate. Also, the issue of renewables, you have a significant upfront cost, which, of course, raises issues in terms of financing, etc. And namely, when you go to countries under development, that some countries and some communities may have this issue of, okay, I want to save money, but I don't have the resources, the financial resources to make this upfront payment. So sometimes it's easier to pay much more on a diesel engine to connect electricity in a developed country, in a country under development, than to have access to much cheaper renewable energy, but in which you have to make a very significant upfront payment, and then the payback, it's in a period of 7 years, 10 years, or 15 years. So you of course, you save a lot of money, but you need the upfront capital that a lot of time that communities don't have the resources. And so that's where the green financing has a very important role also to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Miguel, you've covered like a really wide range of challenges that the energy sector, renewable energy sector faces. And just to summarize a few of those, you mentioned affordability, cost competitiveness, social acceptance. Also, one of the key points that you made, and one thing that I think is important to acknowledge, especially in the upcoming COP, is acknowledging that every country will need a bespoke approach to their energy mix. So for example, some countries which have a greater solar resource needs to be taken into consideration, and that resource needs to be exploited. And so I think at this year at COP, what we'll see is an importance on collaboration of technologies as opposed to competitiveness between technologies. And just to highlight for our listeners, this year we'll be collaborating with the Global Solar Council to deliver a joint wind and solar pavilion. I think this is something that companies like EDP and EDPR can benefit from, which is a collaboration of solutions. And I mean, just going back onto the topic of energy security and energy justice, these are real threats to many different countries, but of varying degrees. So in this section of the podcast, we want to take a more solutions-based approach. So my favourite part. So I have mentioned the implications of geopolitics and price volatility in the new age energy security crisis. Now we want to look at the solutions that we can deploy. And maybe Miguel, I could turn back to you and hear about some of the actions that EDPR are taking too. So from a private sector perspective, what role can developers like EDPR do to ensure that energy security and energy justice is achieved?
I think what we have been working with our clients globally in order to provide that energy security and also fully aligned with our stakeholders, ensuring that we are being a promoter of energy security, of energy justice. I would say that from a private sector, what we see it's that namely large corporations, but not only large corporations, also SMEs and even families are looking more and more for renewable solutions. They want to feel that they are reducing their carbon footprint. There's a pressure also from corporates in terms of sustainability message, in terms of purpose by the companies, in the way that they are delivering their targets in terms of decarbonization. And so renewables are definitely a key topic when you talk about decarbonization. And so what we see globally is these large data center companies or large industrial companies, which are decarbonizing their energy consumption through, again, a mix of solutions. And I think what you highlighted that is that renewable sources are not competitors, they are complementary. I think it's critical. And we see that in our big clients globally, that with some of them, we can have contracts of solar panels, others on wind offshore, others on wind on shore for the same clients in different locations, depending on the best resources in each place for each facility or for each consumption center. So what we are offering to the private sector is so we can help by providing the best solutions for each case. So we have a global presence, so namely in solar distributed generation, we have had global solutions. We can do global PPA frameworks with the multinationals also offering the different solutions of renewable energies in the different locations. And here we're talking about multinational companies. That is fundamental for energy security. And also in terms of the energy justice point that you highlighted, we are talking about, of course, providing these clients with all the know-how that we have in terms of development of renewables projects in a fair way, as I said, with local communities. Also, we have been working on our supply chain just to assure that, which is a concern more and more by corporate clients, to assure that human rights are respected, not only by our company, but also by our suppliers. This issue of energy justice in terms of affordability, in terms of what we can contribute to the reduction of the carbon footprint is more and more important. So we see not only the governments, not only, let's say, the countries promoting decarbonization, but also the private sector as a whole. Today, more than 50% of the renewables that we are developing is for private PPA, so private contracts. Is who is buying the renewable energy from us are private corporations. So that shows that the private sector is really pushing for this energy transition and this decarbonization.
And it's really great to hear that companies like EDPR are taking a role in, as you mentioned, the protection of human rights. I think that's extremely important that companies feel responsible and feel like that's kind of within the remit of their work to take this into consideration in the work that they do, as well as ensuring large scale deployment of renewables to different countries and to different markets. One thing I want to address is that energy security and energy justice are being used in this context quite broadly. But there are so many subcomponents, as you've mentioned, Miguel, to consider, especially if we took time to dive into energy justice in detail. And so a bit of a disclaimer that by no means are we covering everything that energy justice and energy security encompasses, but we're just scratching the surface to start to unpick some of the dialogues that I and others are anticipating to have in less than a month's time. And so rounding off at the end of each episode, we ask what's next. So Miguel, turning to you for the final time, what is one practical policy recommendation or even practical action that you would like to see happen in order to further ensure energy security and energy justice in the path to net zero, and in particular as we draw nearer to COP27?
I think one of the points that we talked before, which is the complementarity of renewable energies, it's fundamental. And I would highlight one example that we have seen in Portugal and Spain growing significantly, which is the hybrid solutions where we have wind farms. You can complement with solar panels and have a more efficient use of the grid connection. Or it can be the other way around. So when you have solar panels that are in operation, and of course you can complement with some wind turbines, and at night when you have the grid connection not being used because we don't have a solar production, you can still use that to transport some energy from wind farms. And so we have seen very interesting projects in Portugal and Spain. It's something that, namely in Europe, can be quite relevant, but not only, I would say, even in US, in regions where we have this bottleneck of the power grid infrastructures, and also can be very efficient because, of course, you can save money. So using the same infrastructure on a more efficient way. We are seeing the technology improving. We have been working with our suppliers on that front, and so we have several cases of projects, as I said, in European market, namely in the Iberian Peninsula. Poland is now working now on that front. Several countries can follow. Of course, there's some question marks normally by the grid operators, but I think we have addressed that together with our suppliers. So technology has improved, and that is one of the key points: is more complementarity between renewable technologies. Of course, the issue of the batteries, which can also address several issues. We have now the emergency of green hydrogen, and so all the political decisions that can reinforce or make it possible that complementarity and put it into practice are very, very welcome.
And I couldn't agree more. I think it's really important that technologies work together instead of just showcasing one, as in most markets. I mean, I'm sure most economies and most markets can benefit from more than one technology. And like you said as well, the role of storage in helping both wind and solar is also important, and something we're hoping to explore more in the next coming weeks. But thank you very much, Miguel. It's been a pleasure to have you on this podcast virtually. And so thank you for joining us to share your solutions-based insights.
Many thanks for your invitation. It was a pleasure to me also, okay?
And I hope this gives some hope to us all that with renewables, we can mitigate these major decarbonisation and energy security challenges. If you are interested in topics like this and all things wind, please feel free to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and of course, visit our website at gwec.net. Thank you.